This episode is brought to you in part by Swim. Here's the thing about wishlist apps. Most of them just sit there. A customer saves a product, and then nothing happens. Swim actually activates that data. When someone wishlists a product, you could trigger price drop or back in stock alerts and feed that intent directly into Klaviyo or your CRM. You're not guessing what people want because they've told you. Plus, customers can share wishlists for gifts, and your team can view them to offer personalized service online or in-store. And unlike cart abandonment, wishlist data is permission-based. These are people raising their hand saying, hey, I want this, just not right now. Swim's been around for over a decade. It powers 45,000 stores and installs in about 5 minutes. You could try it for free today at getswim.com/Kurt. That's getswym.com/Kurt. Everybody's looking for, you know, a hot product, a viral product, and on Shopify, apparel, fashion and apparel, huge category, I believe the biggest, maybe the biggest. What about apparel for dogs? No, apparel for dog lovers. Well, if we're doing one, we may as well do, why not both? That's what our guest today sells, the viral matching dog bathrobe sets, among other things. Yes, we're talking to Brian Nolan, serial entrepreneur from Darren and Phillips. Brian, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Thanks, Kurt. Thanks for having me. I'm doing well. Thanks. How are you?
Happy to have you here is how I'm doing. So your last company, you sold to GoDaddy.
Yeah, that was actually two companies ago. My first company, Sellbrite, I sold to GoDaddy. That was a software company. We were software as a service in the e-commerce space, making tools for multi-channel sellers. We made it easy to sell on Amazon and eBay and all the other marketplaces and keep all your inventory and orders in sync. And after 5.5 years of building that business, we sold it to GoDaddy.
And now you sell dog pajamas. Walk me through that career move.
Well, there was a stop in between. Well, I spent a couple years at GoDaddy actually running product over there for their e-commerce tools. And then there was a stop in between where I had another business that was doing, it was an online travel booking business for outdoor accommodations. I had that for 3 years, ended up selling it to a competitor. And then I took a step where how I ended up with selling dog apparel was I decided I wanted to own another company, but I needed a break from going from zero to one. I needed a break from starting something from scratch. So I started looking into buying an existing business. And I didn't go directly to dog apparel as my category, but I looked at everything really. And I came across this husband and wife team that owned this brand, Darren and Philip. And they were based in Australia and they'd been running it for almost 8 years. And they were looking for new owners because they've had a series of life changes as well, new, you know, young kids and so forth. And they were just ready to do something else. And so I saw the business and met the founders. They were great. And the business looked great too. A lot of the KPIs and metrics around the business really looked good. A lot of repeat customers, great organic traffic, great social engagement, so forth. And I felt like my wife and I bought the business. We felt like we could grow the business here in the US. It was actually started in Australia, given all our experience with e-commerce. So that's how we found ourselves into this. And we loved the brand because we love dogs and we've rescued 5 dogs ourselves. So the brand is all about dogs and there's a huge component to giving back. And so since the beginning, and we've continued this, the brand has donated over $1.25 million to dog rescues around the world. And we've done that through raising money through our community. We've done that through donating proceeds of products to dog rescues, donating actual product to dog rescues where they need it. So that was important to us too. And we continued that on. So that's how I ended up owning a business that sells a lifestyle business for dog lovers that sells both human apparel and matching dog apparel.
Was this your first business purchase?
It was my first business purchase, yes. So I had sold two businesses.
If I buy a candy bar, that's a purchase. A business I acquire. Ooh, so much more formal.
That's right, yeah.
So in our business acquisition, what surprised you about that?
Well, in this business in particular, what we underestimated, I think, was how important the founder and her relationship with the community was. So she was really the face of the business. Actually, I take it back. Her dogs, who the business is named after, Darren and Philip, were the original faces of the business. They had an Instagram presence and a huge following on Instagram, and the brand developed out of that. And then she became the face, the human face of it, the founder. Once the dogs had passed, and once the founder was gone because we acquired the business, that engagement was hard to replicate. And so we've tried to reposition the brand to be, not to copy her, because we know we just can't replace her and copy her. She was loved by the community, but to make it a little bit of our own and put our own spin and vision on the brand. And so for the last year, we've been working on that. And that means a little bit of like brand tweaking as well. Small things, logo and visual things to indicate that it's a little bit of a shift in the brand, but also the product. And more importantly, it was originally developed as more of a novelty type product for dogs with a matching human side. So a dog shirt with matching human shirt or pajamas. We've tried to flip that to say this is a lifestyle brand for humans, for pet people, for dog lovers. And if you want, your dog can match you. So it's a little bit of a, you know, we're just sort of twisting it there, but it changes the direction of how we market it and how, and the type of product we make for it.
So who's buying? Are we buying for ourselves or for dogs?
Sometimes, well, our customers do both. We have customers that purely just buy for their dogs, and are the robes that you mentioned early on are our best sellers. So that's a human soft luxury bathrobe, but there's also a calming robe for dogs. So it's made out of the same quality plush material. Feels like the dog is under a blanket or something. You know, it's very cozy for the dog, but there's a strap that goes around the dog to keep it on. But it acts like a swaddle effect and creates a calming effect for the dog. So some people just buy for functionality for the dog. Some people buy for cuteness for the dog. But a lot of people buy for identity for themselves too. They want to say, I'm a dog person. I love my dog. My dog is like a child to me. We match, just like how they have, like, you know, mommy and me matching for your mom and the kid, or even daddy and me. With so many people owning dogs now rather than children, and rather than having children. Having children. So there's a little bit of both. We have customers on both that do both.
In fashion and apparel, size is the big sticking point. People going, well, will this fit me? What happens if it doesn't? And then dealing with returns and exchanges. Now we're compounding the problem because we're doing sizing for people and dogs.
Yeah.
Has that been a challenge or, you know, solved problem?
It's a challenge. I would say even the human sizing is easier because we're all basically the same shape, if you will. We're different sizes, but the same shape. Dogs are also different sizes, but also different shapes. Mm. You have different barrel-chested dogs. You have long, skinny dogs, you know, so different structure of their bodies, which makes sizing even harder. We have eight now. We had just added double extra large, but we go all the way from triple extra small, which is your Chihuahua, all the way up to double extra large. Thankfully, they had a lot of that sizing kind of figured out beforehand, except on the real small sizes, they were still too big for like your Chihuahua. So when we took it over, we adjusted the smallest three sizes to make them even smaller and grade that a little bit differently. But it's kind of figured out. I mean, it's not going to fit every dog. And sometimes, you know, we do offer free exchanges because we know that's a thing. And we have a pretty good size chart on our website that shows you how to measure your dog and pick the right size. But we use, you know, tools to make exchanges really easy too.
Favorite app you like for this, for returns and exchanges?
Loop. We use Loop Returns, which is a popular, you know, favorite. Yeah.
Very popular. And you had to move this from Australia to, you're in Denver. Any difficulties there?
Weird things you would never think about. Like, you could not.
That's what I wanted. That's why I asked. I'm like, I bet this is harder than I think.
weird random stuff that I never thought. So the inventory is that we actually use a third 3PL, third party logistics for the inventory. So we still have a warehouse in Australia because we have a big customer base there still, and in Los Angeles. So that didn't change. We still have our inventory there. But random things like they use Google Workspace for email and everything, and you cannot change the billing country on your Google Workspace account.
Whoops.
Which means when I came in and I want to put my credit card, I can't. So I had to create a whole new Google Workspace account with United States billing and find a tool to migrate it. They don't make migration easy either. So migrate all the Google Drive files, all the emails, all that stuff over to the new account. So little things like that.
Yeah, what a pain.
TikTok, same thing, actually. TikTok, you cannot change the country, the region that it's in. So we lost the following on our TikTok account. And we wanted to do that because they don't have TikTok shop in Australia. So we couldn't create a TikTok shop and connect it to our TikTok account if it was still Australian based. So those kinds of things were just like driving me crazy in the first 6 months.
All solvable, but like, you know, that's the kind of stuff that when you have a to-do list, it's just going straight to the bottom. Like, oh, go fight with SaaS vendor. Just not on the top of my list of exciting, productive, rewarding things to do as an entrepreneur. Right. But jobs to be done.
Yeah.
So, and even for you, I mean, you spent years building software to help stores sell more. And so like, you're someone who would be well-versed in dealing with this, I would think, or at least, you know, adept at it. Now, you're the store. You know, in the past, you were building software for stores. You're the store owner.
That's right.
What do you think you got completely wrong about running a store?
Oh, man. What didn't I get wrong? I mean, it's hard. It's so much harder. Most people run some kind of inventory store and then go to tech because they realize running a store and holding inventory is hard. Things have changed just so much. You know, when I started Sellbrite in 2013, it was really easy to list on Amazon. You didn't have to pay for ads. You just get your inventory there and it would start selling. Now you really have to like use their Vine program to give out free product to get reviews. You have to run ads. Like everything just feels more complicated. There's more tools, there's more expectations. And on top of all that, you're trying to figure out inventory and purchasing. And for us, we have two warehouses. So how much do I want to send to Australia? How much do I want to keep in the US, which ships to the rest of the world? So all those things, I think, were just a learning curve, right? I understood all that. I'm very technical. I used to write software. So like I can get into my Shopify theme and change the liquid code and everything just fine. But actually getting the business to perform and improve conversion rates and list on Amazon and all these things that we do to try to grow our business are just so much harder 13 years later than, you know, from when I started my first company and things were relatively simple still in e-commerce then.
It's funny. It is the more sophisticated the tools become to make life easier, the more complicated all of this gets. Because it is a constant arms race. You know, if someone says, hey, here's a tool that is going to, you know, do 80% of your marketing for you in 1/10 the time. And that is what AI has given us. And they're like, guess what? It's going to be $20 a month. It's practically free. And it's going to do a C+ job on everything it does. It'll be great. And that's what you now have. Like that now becomes table stakes. So it's like you could do everything pretty well.
Right.
And so you have to do everything pretty well. And now, all right, like, where do you go from there?
Yeah.
But okay, if I'm a merchant, if I'm going from vendor to being a merchant, the things that scare me, cash flow conversion cycle, inventory and forecasting. So like those two go together. And then the marketing funnel. I don't want to end up in a situation where I'm paying customers to buy my product, where I'm at net loss on that first sale. Tell me about, you know, your experience with marketing funnel.
Yeah. Luckily, we have a pretty strong LTV with this business and we have a really high repeat customer rate. We have customers that have purchased from us 80 plus times. So when we're looking at the
80
customer
plus times is crazy,
right?
Quite unusual.
Yeah. Right. And when we look at the customer acquisition cost, we are making that bet that, okay, maybe it is okay to lose money on that first order. just to get them in our world and, you know, and sell them more stuff as we launch new product and get that engine going with the repeat customers, right? We obviously do email and SMS and all that stuff, and social media, and just keep, you know, keeping awareness and keeping them top of mind all the time. But losing money on every sale is great, but then the cash situation comes in. So somebody still has to pay for that and you don't get recouped and you don't, you know, get paid back until down the line, maybe a year later. So where does that cash come from? We self-finance this business. And you know, we're putting in our own money into this. So there's another risk factor there where it's our personal finances at risk, and how much do we want to risk and spend basically believing in the future that this engine does work and will convert. Meanwhile, you know, the ads just keep getting more expensive every day.
Here's some customer service emails you don't want to wake up to. I was drunk. This was a gift, but we broke up. Wrong color, wrong size, wrong me. Sound familiar? With Cleverific, you don't have to deal with these anymore. Cleverific gives your customers a self-service portal to edit their own orders. No emails, no back and forth, just simple fixes. Fewer support tickets, faster fulfillment, and happier customers. Peter Manning New York slashed their order support request by 99%. You can too. Get 50% off the Cleverific Pro plan, just $49 a month, exclusively for the unofficial Shopify podcast listeners. Go to cleverific.com/unofficial and use promo code KURT50. Fix the problem before it's a problem. That's Cleverific. Yeah. I mean, you've stepped on the landmine. That is, if I have to pick the single biggest pain or problem in e-commerce as a store owner, it is continuously rising customer acquisition cost. And it's because Meta is just doing a great job at the thing that is most profitable and generates revenue for them. Sell more ads, get more eyeballs, right? They keep adding more surfaces to get more impressions and more ad units. And then with AI, it's just turned into a shotgun blast of, we could just test everything and try everything. And, you know, it is incentivized that every quarter they need to make more money and they need to pay for this AI nonsense that, you know, they've invested in hugely. How do you do it? Sell more ads, more expensive ads. So who's footing the bill for everything? You, right? E-commerce merchants. And then you don't get a choice. Where else are you going to advertise? What else are you going to do? Oh, skip the largest platform for advertising?
Turn off the faucet? Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, okay, you're stuck. And they know it. It's a kind of a strange situation.
It is. And for our product, it does really well on a visual platform like, you know, Facebook or Instagram, where you can see there's a cuteness factor. You can see the pictures. We use a lot of creator content for our ads. And they do well, some better than others, of course, but that's part of the process, right? Is just testing and see what works and double downing on that stuff. But even then, the content runs its course. And so you're constantly feeding new content and trying to figure out what works. And, you know, your ROAS is going like this. And some days you just want to pound your head against the wall.
I would imagine that you have an easier time than most getting UGC. My camera roll is like 80% photos of my wife. My wife's camera roll is 80% photos of our cat, right? Yeah. This person who is going to buy a dog robe loves taking photos of their dog.
That's true. We have more dog photos than we can want. What we're trying to do though is get more human and dog together photos, which are a little bit harder because a lot of these people have no problem posting pictures of their dogs online. And there's a lot of Instagram accounts that are just dog accounts and people follow them to see cute pictures of their dogs. But we're trying to make more of a lifestyle brand where the dog is the lifestyle. So I want to see the person interacting with their dog, matching with their dog, you know, walking their dog, taking them to the coffee shop, whatever, like living life with their dog. And I want more of that type of content. That's harder to get because not everybody's comfortable being in front of the camera and taking pictures of themselves.
Not everybody wants to go face to camera, right? It's a weird hurdle to get over and then just the level of effort involved to make a decent video of yourself. Either I got to get other people to hold the camera, you know, I need a tripod. Like it just adds extra layers of complexity. So I get how, would end up with tons of dog photos, but not necessarily.
You know, people don't want to be at the coffee shop taking video right. of themselves. They feel funny doing that or whatever, but no problem right. with the dog. Everybody's looking at the dog anyway. So yeah, a lot of dog content. That's great. But we're trying to balance that because there is the human side of it, you know, and we want to showcase that as well.
I'm still hearing that selling dog robes is harder than selling robes to dogs is harder than selling software to GoDaddy.
Yes. I would say so. I mean, it's building a, well, again, times have changed. Subscription software right now is being rocked by AI as well. So I'm glad I'm not an owner also of SaaS in this business, in this time. But at the time, building a SaaS business with recurring revenue and high profit margins was like the dream, and it was awesome. And we timed it right with Amazon, fulfillment by Amazon just starting and not having tools out there to support that. So that's where we started. Don't get me wrong. Selling the business was not easy either, but it was a one period of time that was very difficult to get through due diligence. But this is like a daily, you know, owning any kind of brand, but in particular an apparel brand is difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. There's always issues that like you just didn't think of. And then margins and apparel can be rough too. We work with a lot of apparel brands.
And just you're constantly needing new designs and styles and
yes.
so forth. Yep.
Oh. Yeah, I need fashion and apparel more than most is really driven by a lot of novelty, right? Yeah. Okay, what do they have to offer now? Like I saw the last sweatshirt and I didn't buy it. Show what do you got now? Okay. Right. And wow, a limited edition color. I can't believe it. You know, and then that's the one you buy. Right. But okay, for the people who said yes to that, you had all these other customers who looked and said, I don't want that. And so 30 days later, guess what? You get to do it again. And that, it's like, all right, I could do that for a little while. But then by year two, I mean, it's getting rough. You start running out of ideas. It's
exhausting.
Hard.
It's exhausting. Yeah. And if you make the wrong thing and you're stuck with that inventory, then you got to figure out how to liquidate it and get rid of it and hopefully not lose money on it, but recover, you know, some money on it. And otherwise, it's sitting in your warehouse just collecting storage fees.
And then, yeah, the tough part is you truly don't know what will or won't be successful. You know, the stuff that I've fallen in love with before a launch is rarely the stuff that does hugely well after a launch. Tell me, have you ever had a situation like that? Have you had a line or like, all right, this one, I'm so proud of this, and then crickets?
We have, actually. And this goes back to trying to evolve the product selection from what it was, which was, you know, prints that were almost cartoony, like prints of illustrations of dogs on pajamas and things like that, which nowadays you can find at Walmart. You can get matching Christmas PJs with your dog at Walmart for $14. So we're also like, okay, this has become sort of widespread. We need to constantly evolve and stay ahead of it. But we came out with a really nice knit sweater that's super soft and thick and comfortable last year during winter. And we thought it was going to be great and cute, and it just didn't sell very well. So, you know, we have it in two different colors for humans and dogs and all this inventory. And we'll see if we can push it through this coming winter. Good thing is with Australia, they're southern hemisphere, right? So it's their winter now. It's our summer. So we can kind of like move inventory, but it's also cost prohibitive to move inventory back and forth between the US and Australia. That's more expensive than going from China to the United States. So it's
interesting.
We've been burned a couple times trying to move some like straggler inventory. We're like, oh, we'll just add it to the US. We have some demand here, and it ate up all our margin just getting it here.
And is it like an import cost, or is it just shipping cost?
Shipping. It just takes 30 days on a ship to get from Asia to the US. It takes 45 days from Australia to the US on a ship. And it's just way more expensive, probably because there's less freight lines going back and forth. Just not good. And then you could ship it by air, but then it's like insanely expensive.
Hugely expensive.
We've had some of those that just like we were excited about. We spent a lot of time on the design of it and samples and getting it perfected, and then it just didn't move. We don't.
It's
hard to say why.
Well, that's the other part. I've also seen situations where stuff that we thought wouldn't move, or like it did okay but not great, on a relaunch in just a different circumstances, suddenly is a huge hit. And so sometimes, like, you, it's just timing. But yeah. When you launch it and it flops, you really have no idea why. So it kind of shakes your confidence a little bit. You're like, oh man, what do we do here?
It does. I mean, it could be something as simple as like the photos and the models and the types of dogs we used in the photos, or, you know, maybe reshooting it and getting other content there and kind of like you're saying, sort of repositioning it, different timing, you know, different time of the year. All those things could factor in and change it.
What, we talked about, you know, Meta and the difficulty and the rising costs. You also mentioned that you're on TikTok. Do you sell on TikTok Shop? Do you do advertising there?
We do. I wouldn't say we sell a lot on TikTok Shop, but we have tried to follow the playbook that other brands, a lot of supplement brands and, you know, consumables use, but also some apparel brands like Comfort Hoodies use this model of seeding out a crap load of product to creators and getting a ton of content. And it doesn't need to be big creators. We're talking little creators that have generated a little bit of GMV for their brands, but just getting a high volume out there.
Yeah, I want surface area,
right? And then that drives TikTok Shop orders. But we've also seen it's not huge, because we just don't have the budget to seed out thousands or tens of thousands, because it is.
Oh wow.
Expensive,
okay, that's
right?
What
we're
it takes.
Hundreds, but yeah, I think Comfort got up into like 50,000 creators that they sent product out to.
Whoa.
We're doing it in the hundreds, and that's still expensive for us. So you have your cost of goods plus shipping, plus the tools you're using. You know, I have a woman helping me out on the TikTok side of things and managing all the relationships with the creators and getting them to post new content and everything. But we do see a halo effect with TikTok. So not everybody is comfortable buying on TikTok Shop yet, but they'll search for it. You know, they'll see it and then go search either on Amazon or on Google or whatever. And so we see organic traffic and sales on our site and Amazon pickup when we do things on TikTok Shop. And some TikTok orders that come in.
All right. As a software guy in 2026, I have to ask you, are you Claude pilled?
Yeah. I use Claude. I use ChatGPT and Claude, but I use mostly Claude. I feel like ChatGPT does a little bit better with brand tone in terms of our copywriting and things like that. But I use Claude for everything. Yeah. Code for strategic decisions, for, you know, analyzing data, spreadsheets, all that stuff.
Claude Code's my favorite, and I'm just a big dork, so I'm just always doing it in the terminal, right? I want the command line interface like I'm on a 1980s bulletin board, and I love it.
Have you used the superpower skill?
I've got superpowers installed. You know, I use that for plan writing. And late with the... During the Fable preview, I would create superpower plans with Fable, and then have Opus execute those. So that's a conserving my Fable tokens.
Oh, nice. Like I said, I do most of it. I'll have it write some code that I can copy paste into a theme if I need to, but, you know, I'm pretty comfortable with all that stuff anyway, but it's just fast.
You know, yeah.
Copy the code, paste it in and say, I wanted to do this, edit it. And it's so fast. Right. But yeah, I have it hooked in with the Shopify connector. And so it can access all the APIs on Shopify and pull in all the data and analyze and make suggestions. I basically made Claude my CMO and told it, you know, it's a CMO and guiding decisions based on that.
Clever. Yeah, I have a lot of fun with it. I like it. The only thing I don't like is for regular tasks, I love it. For building net new things, I have mixed feelings about it because it robs you of the joy of productivity. I mean, it's like I could describe it. It's going to do the work. It's going to do it in 1/10 the time, and then it's going to give me 1/10 the satisfaction. And so that's like really, that's become my big issue. That and like everyone using it, not realizing that they're all producing exactly the same C+ stuff.
Yeah.
And being like, I built. And then for whatever reason, it's always, regardless of what it is, like it's just a spreadsheet. And they're like, it's blank OS. I'm like, okay. Claude came up with the name, right? And it's like, that's what it always does. So just like seeing people very proud of the same software getting made over and over, a little strange. But you know, overall, I would not give up the tools. I would not trade them.
Right. That satisfaction you mentioned is big. And I always tell people who aren't, you know, software developers or software people or tech people or whatever, it's that same kind of satisfaction you get when you're working in an Excel spreadsheet and you get, you know, reference cells referencing other cells and it just works and you change something and it like updates this whole thing. And that satisfaction you get, that's kind of the same thing when you build software and it works and you write it yourself and everything. And yeah, I guess that's gone.
Yeah,
I write it for you.
Support for this episode comes from Zipify One-Click Upsell. And they want to know, what if your upsell app paid for itself? Every Shopify merchant knows they need upsells. But upsells aren't free. There's the monthly cost, a cut of every sale. Some apps charge you per offer view, whether it converts or not. One-Click Upsell is the gold standard. It's the only upsell app that works across your entire funnel. The product page, the cart, checkout, and post-purchase. And recently, they introduced a feature that can make all of those upsells free. It's called Post Profit. It places brand safe offers from names like Disney Plus and Hilton on your thank you page, and then deposits cash directly into your bank account. Some merchants are clearing $100,000 a month simply by turning it on. Post Profit can cover your entire one-click upsell subscription, so you get the best full funnel upsell coverage available for a fraction of the cost. So free upsells sound good to you? Visit Zipify.com/Kurt and start your free trial today. That's Zipify.com/KURT. 30 days free. So that's missing. But, you know, at the same time, like there's just all this data. Like right now, there's like 7 tasks this thing's working on for me at the moment, you know, in just different terminal sessions. And so it's like, okay, that I'm not giving that up. You know, productivity or satisfaction be damned.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
What are you excited about with this business? I'm sure, you know, just keep the day-to-day of keeping an online store going. I'm sure, you know, there are times it keeps you up at night. But looking forward, what are you excited about here?
I still feel like there's an unlock that I haven't hit yet with the brand and really resonating with the audience and the right customer base of the dog person who is stylish themselves and wants to have that identity, but not in a cheesy, corny way, you know, all the stuff you find on Etsy or whatever. So we haven't hit that yet, but I feel like that's the unlock to really grow this business. And so we're trying to get there. And part of it is just the cycle time on creating new product. You know, our lead times are 7 to 9 months probably from starting a design on a product to getting samples and actually being able to sell it in our warehouse. So it's just, you have to be patient. You know, I'm used to software development where everything's pretty immediate and you can see your results quickly. And this is like, it just takes time to see the fruit of your labor actually come to life and be able to sell it and see the result. So, but that's what I'm excited about. I feel like that unlock is there somewhere, and we've hit it a couple times with some products, but we're not quite there as a brand. And I that's what I need to get to.
I like that idea though. You know, if like, all right, if people who own dogs, people who will buy clothes, matching apparel, okay. Now people who want non-cheesy, you know, I don't have a better phrase for it, but I know exactly what you mean.
100%. Non-cheesy and non-disposable, right? Like good quality product.
Yeah,
like
that fast fashion stuff is like...
Yeah.
Good
you buy quality it, hoodie that you would wear even if it wasn't dog related or whatever, but then having the identity built in. And if you want, your dog can match. Not everybody puts clothes on their dogs and that's totally fine, right? Like, that's fine. But you can still have your piece and your identity. And if you want to match with your dog, or have your dog match you, I should say, then you can.
Have you thought about targeting based on weather and geography? So I'm in Chicago in the Midwest. And I don't think twice when I see a dog in a sweater in the winter. Like, it's just, that is a totally normal thing to do.
Yeah, we have. And again, we have a global audience right now. So it's, we always have some season going on. Yeah, it's really weird making holiday Christmas pajamas when for people in Australia, because they celebrate Christmas on the same day, but it's summer for them. So they want short pajamas, short sleeves and shorts, not long, cozy pajamas to sit by the fireplace. So those kinds of things you have to think about. And we, yes, to answer your question, we have thought about and done some targeting based on that, but it's also product development based on that.
Interesting. Okay. And yeah, any apps you can't live without in that store?
Ooh. Man, I'd have to look through the list.
Do you use anything to connect analytics data into Claude or ChatGPT?
I just use the Claude connector, the native Claude connector that connects to Shopify.
Okay.
To pull it all in. But I mean, loop returns, we mentioned that earlier. That's a great hands-off handling all the returns and exchanges automatically, which is awesome. We use JudgeMe for reviews. Kind of, you know, try to use best in practice apps for everything. Oh, we do. I will say we do a lot of bundling. So we use bundling tools because we want you to purchase the matching stuff. And so I can, you know, you add a robe, a human robe to your cart, or add a dog robe to your cart. I want you to purchase the other corresponding robe. And so we do bundling, virtual bundling, to be able to offer discounts when you buy those things together, and upsells and cross sells based on all that kind of stuff. So all those tools have been huge for driving up cart value and average order value.
Yeah, I love bundling for driving up average order value. Like, you know, e-commerce is a math problem. If I can't change anything else, I can always change, potentially, I can always change AOV and give people the opportunity and the nudge to be like, hey, if you wanted to make a bigger single order, here's the stuff that goes together, right? Yep. And then they decide. But if you don't surface it, you know, those things, don't be surprised when those bundles don't sell.
Right.
So, yeah, exactly. I like those a lot. I saw a good one on a headphone site recently that just said, you know, they had like five versions of the same thing. And then on every one, it would say, considering an upgrade, and it would just jump you to the next most expensive model. And it, like, so I clicked it. And then the next one was like, considering an upgrade, and it was just the next most expensive one. And I just kept going, and it walked me from $200 to $600. And I'm like, you know, and you don't need an app for that. You could build that in the theme. Shopify Sidekick could generate it with the right description. You would be able to do it easily. And yeah, so I like that.
That's like, is one way to do like, it. You know, you bought the small popcorn. You sure you don't want the medium for 50 cents more? And
the movie theater. They're a great exercise in merchandising. They do may as well pricing, where it's like the medium is a dollar less than, you know, the like extreme large bundles, a dollar more. Just give me the vomit pack, please, for, you know, $27.
Right.
But yeah. And then, of course, I would be remiss to not mention free gift with purchase. You could run free gift with purchase on here to try and get people to nudge them to spend a little more.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something we actually have not tried yet that's on my list of what I want to do. Would you recommend a separate item, an exclusive item for that gift, or just something in the store already as the gift?
The ideal scenario is you do an exclusive item that can only be purchased as a free gift with purchase. Yeah. So you do, like, you know, the classic example as you use is, you know, a fancy enamel pin, and you give it a real price, but it's limited edition, so it's like a little more, and they can't buy it outside of, and those are extra rules you got to add, you know, if you really want to enforce it, but you don't let them buy it outside of the free gift with purchase. And I think, you know, I like that method a lot for an FGWP, or like just adds additional intrinsic value to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw Vuori did something like that, and they had a pretty high threshold too. It was like, get a free, you know, Vuori tote bag, but you had to spend like $250. It was a pretty high threshold to get this, like, probably cost them, you know, $5 or less to make this tote. But it was exclusive, and that was the only way to get it. And people like to show off their Vuori, right? So, yeah, we got to try that out. I think that would do well with us.
Yeah, so we, you know, it's always top of mind for me because we have our own free gift with purchase app, Promo Party. And it's got, and you mentioned, yeah, I was like trying to, we were tearing our hair out trying to figure out, like, how do you communicate this offer, right? Like, what's the best place? What's the best way to do it? And, you know, progress bar or text is the right way to do it. And we decided product detail page at the product form is the right place to do it because that's where the purchase decision happens. You know, that's where they're actively thinking about it. And you brought up Vuori as your example, that when we were like looking at various examples and inspiration, that was the one that we picked as like, wow, they did such a good job of messaging this on the product page as part of the product form. So quite thrilled that you brought that up organically because we found the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Very cool. Okay. Well, I got to try it out. I'm going to use your app.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Any feedback? Happy to have it. Yeah. Hashtag SponCon. Okay. Darren and Finn, I mean, it's a great looking site. It looks good. It works well. If I had a dog, for sure, I would be shopping the site right now. Any future plans? Any words of wisdom before you leave us? Like the one thing you wish you knew before you got into this?
I thought it would be a little bit more of a passive kind of business than it has been. You can put unlimited hours into a business like this, right? To try to constantly tweak the levers to find growth. So, but it's a lifestyle business for us. So we're not appeasing to any investors or anything, and it's what we want to make of it. So of course we want to grow it and we'd love to grow it. And for me, it's as much of a just personal sort of gamification in my own head of succeeding and trying to win and try to grow the business as it is like a money-making thing. So, you know, I think you can go with, you can create a brand like this or buy a brand or however you want to go about it, but they don't all have to grow into $100 million brands. It's okay to have a brand just kick off a little bit of money for you and be something you work on and be proud of and have some personal satisfaction building, and that's okay. Like, I think a lot of what we see in media is talk about, oh my God, this brand got to, you know, $100 million in sales and they got bought by XYZ. That doesn't have to be everybody's goal. And it's okay to say, hey, you know, if I get to $1 million in sales, awesome. Like, that's a huge accomplishment and I had fun doing it. So that'd be my advice to everybody is like, don't be influenced by what you read or see in the media. Like, just make it your own goal and do what you want. It's your own brand. You can do whatever you want.
I love that advice. I have music to my ears, just satisfying to hear it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone preaching the lifestyle business as not a bad thing.
You know, no, not by
people
any means.
Use lifestyle business in a derogatory way. I'm like, are you kidding?
That makes up most of the businesses in this country or lifestyle businesses, right?
Yeah.
And people make great livings on a lifestyle business. And honestly, having had an exit where I made no money for 6 years as a startup and then got a single check in 1 year and now, you know, have to use that money and figure out how to make that grow. I would rather just have consistent money year over year and be comfortable that there's, you know, even if it's a lifestyle business, even if it's 100K to, you know, whatever it is, like just having that consistent money coming in from the business you built rather than trying to just go for a long stretch and hopefully you get an exit. That's just a much higher risk calculation that people need to make.
Oh, so for sure.
Yeah, lifestyle businesses are, there's nothing wrong with them at all.
Brian Nolan, Darren and Phillips, will any of this fit my cat? I got to put a robe on my cat.
We do have some people. Yeah, I got some cat people using our products too.
He's a beefy cat. I think it would work.
The biggest problem is cats are feisty. You can't, sometimes just getting something on them is the hardest part.
Yeah, he might put up with it, but no, we'll see. We'll see. I'll consider it. But Brian, this has been great. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, before you go, I was hoping you would check out our new app, Promo Party Pro. It is what I want to be the single best, easiest way to run a free gift with purchase promo on Shopify. We just put it live in the App Store. We've got less than 50 users. We want your feedback. So if you need to run a free gift with purchase promo in the near future, install it, try it. There's a live chat. I check that all the time. And so if you have any issues at all, you know, or any suggestions on how we can make it even easier to use, let us know. We're happy to help. If you want to try it, search Promo Party in the App Store. Promo Party Pro is the app. Give it a shot. It's got a free trial. Thanks.